interview. Okay, today is July 29th, 1988, and I'm here with Jack Piccolo at his office in Jacksonville, Florida. Okay, first of all, I need your full name.
Jack L. Piccolo.
Okay, and how's Piccolo spelled?
P-I-C-C-A-L-O.
Okay, and your middle name? You don't want to tell me that one?
Lee,
okay. Mm-hmm. All right, and we need your address, too.
All right, 4244 Shirley Avenue. And that's in Jacksonville. Zip, you want 32210.
Okay. And your date of birth and your birthplace?
3/15/50. And I was born in Fairmont, West Virginia.
Okay. And other places that you've lived besides?
I lived in it for a period of time in Detroit, just for a short period of time while my father was training for another job. And we moved to New Orleans and to Brevard County, Florida. And I've been down there for 20 years or so, off and on. And now I moved to Jacksonville. Hmm. For 10 years ago, and that's where I've been.
Okay. And your occupation?
Salesman.
Okay. And that's here at General Hardware?
It's General Hardware Company.
Okay. All right. And I'm interested in how you got interested in bluegrass and where you got your start there.
Well, the first time that I ever really felt comfortable, it's a good distance.
It's fine. Yeah.
The first time I really got involved with bluegrass was when I was 16 years old, living in New Orleans. And every Saturday they used to have a Flat and Scruggs program that came on every Saturday at 1 o'clock. And I can remember for so many years, or for a period of time there while they were together, I would run home no matter where I was at to watch that program because I just fell in love with the sound of the banjo. So that was like in 63, 64. And well, actually, that was about when I was 14. And then somewhere around after listening and really enjoying it for that length of time, I bought a banjo about the time I was 16.
How did you learn to play?
Well, originally, I fooled around with it, just trying to make sounds, and did okay with that. And I listened to records, and I used to have, most of the older phonographs always had the, was it 19? Speed. I can't think of speed.
It went down to 16.
16 or 19, yeah. Whatever it was,
Yeah.
And a lot of the earlier stuff I learned that way. And You could just, I'd tune my banjo all the way down to it, and try to pick out each note, and it was a real chore. But I learned a few things. But, I found the Pete Seeger banjo book, which that's originally
that's
how
classic,
I really got going. And I got into the old time style, which I still play to some degree. But of course, in Jacksonville, there's not a whole lot of people. At least I haven't run across them that are the old-time musicians.
Yeah, you've got more of a bluegrass scene here in Jacksonville.
Yeah, bluegrass here. I did live in another part of Florida for about 2 or 3 years over in an area, Dade City, and they have the Florida Old-Time Music Festival over there every year. And I met in Tampa. That's right outside of Tampa. And the Tampa Bay, St. Petersburg area, and I've got some friends over there, it's just got a tremendous music following, not only in old time, but in bluegrass. Big old time following in bluegrass, along with many of the other kind. They've got a radio station called WMNF, and it's strictly nonprofit. Everybody on it's volunteer, and for like from 4 to 6 every day is bluegrass, and from on every Thursday they have British Isles music.
Oh, yeah.
and that was a real plus, but I really got involved in it more then too.
Oh, I see. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Okay. You play both, it's kind of the old time style and bluegrass. You also do a little bit with some of the melodic or progressive style, I guess too.
Yeah,
yeah.
A little bit. I got really involved in that back. Of course, anybody who plays the banjo for a period of time, the Scruggs style picking, which I really enjoy, and there's some areas of it that's very, very difficult to play, and I don't know that I've ever really got that down perfectly, But, I think a lot of times people reached out because of the, it seems like you can go after with more detail a lot of the fiddle tunes rather than just playing fill or backup.
Yeah.
You can follow it note for note, and that is obviously something that I think that a lot of banjo players could not do in the past. Of course, when you step over the line and play some of that, a lot of banjo players and old-time traditional bluegrass people you know, alienate. They think that you, you know, you're not true to the music, it seems like. But I really enjoy all of it.
Yeah, they get kind of the purists that have that reaction purists. To it. I wonder how the melodic style's received here in Jacksonville. Like,
I would really say it's more traditional in Jacksonville, although some there are, you know, there's the finest banjo player here in this area is the Florida State champion. I think I've talked to you about Joey Spaulding, and he is tremendous. He plays 98% hardcore bluegrass, I mean, and Scruggs style. But there are a few others that are around that play, you know, melodic style. But, you know, it's I would say it's mostly traditional bluegrass.
The other
bluegrass. Southern Georgia, you know.
Oh, yeah.
That's what really Jacksonville is, I think, is more Southern Georgia.
I think so, too, yeah. I think the line where kind of the Florida, what everybody thinks of Florida, probably begins right around maybe Orlando or a little bit lower than that. The rest is just Georgia. It seems like the other bluegrass musicians who don't play banjo are pretty interested in the melodic style too. They seem pretty open to it. Like,
oh yeah, you mean like the mandolin and guitar player? Yeah, I don't. Again, you know, I think some of the old time, you know, like Jim Kaysen, for a good example, is a fellow that plays an excellent traditional guitar. And sometimes when you start playing melodics, he just gets all confused. And but yet he does an excellent job with traditional stuff, and he can hear it, I guess, rather than thinking of it like a fiddle. You know, but yes, most people I think enjoy it.
Yeah.
You know, most of the mandolin players, because obviously a mandolin player many times plays melodically. I mean, you know, most of the time, unless it's slower music, you know, then they'll.
Did the whole melodic style develop from just trying to get the fiddle tunes, or was it kind of just revamping some of the old?
I can tell you what I've been told. Okay. You know, and that's, you know, I think a lot of it came from Bobby Thompson and Bill Keith, who originally was trying to do breaks while they were with Jim and Jesse and Bill Monroe to follow along with breaks that Bill Monroe on fiddle tunes that they were doing. And rather than just fill in with what is the word? It's not melodic, but it's not note for note. It's I can't think of what you're saying, but you know.
I think I know what you mean.
Yeah, they follow the melody, and many times it's recognizable, but it's not it. It's not the melody, and I think in an effort to try to play more melodically, they you know stumbled into it. I even think Don Reno in some of his earlier stuff is stepped onto some of that ground there, the early, very basic melodic moves that are just passe nowadays.
Yeah. I've listened to some of the old-time banjo playing from even like the 1920s and before, and sometimes the old-time banjos doing those melody lines too that sounds real similar to what you hear in bluegrass.
And the old-time melodic playing, that's really basically what I play.
Uh-huh.
And I really enjoy that, but yet sometimes, like when I was down at Dade City, I went to the old-time music festival there, and they have a banjo championship and a fiddle, and it's all old style. And, you know, I started to play, and they said that I was too progressive, that the stuff that I played was not traditional enough. And I really found that interesting because I was playing old-time fiddle tunes. But in any case, you know, the real purist, as we're calling them, I don't think plays as much melody. He plays more rhythm in an old string band.
Yeah.
And he doesn't take leads. Like in bluegrass, the fiddle player will play, and then the mandolin, and then the banjo, and so on. And in old time, they all play together. And the banjo's function, the fiddle will play the melody over and over and over, and the banjo will play the rhythm. More of a rhythmic instrument than anything.
Is that because old time is more like a dance music?
I think so. I think that's probably follows from playing square dances and whatnot.
Yeah
and it's repetitious. Yeah, sometimes I've noticed in some of the better bands, very good, but they'll play the exact same break 20 times. And you sit there and the guys, I try to, you know, change it around a little bit.
Throw in something else. Yeah, bluegrass music's more of like a spectator music. You don't really have bluegrass dances very much.
I think you're right. I think, you know what I've always said, most of the time that I've ever gone to a bluegrass festival, which I used to go quite often, is that the people that are involved. If you were to go, and I've said this, I believe this is true. If you went to a bluegrass festival, you got up on the stage and you looked out there and you told everybody to raise their hand that plays some type of instrument, I would venture to say probably 80% of them would raise their hand or more. And so, you know, to me, bluegrass is a participating music. people go to see people that they enjoy playing instruments that they play or are familiar with. And unlike rock or other types of music where, you know, that's not the case at all, I don't think.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure some people do play, but by far the percentage would have to be under 10, you know.
Yeah.
So I think it's more of a entertainment, you know, you go to pick with your friends around the campground, you know. And I know every time we go, there's been so many times in the past that I would not even go to the stage area. You just end up staying right on the campground,
yeah,
and playing with this group and going to another camp, you know, camping area and playing with another group.
Yeah.
So it's very much fun that way.
Yeah. The bluegrass fans have kind of a more sophisticated knowledge of the music than, like, a lot of the rock and roll fans. Like, rock and roll music isn't really that complex, mm-hmm, but I think the rock and roll fans don't exactly realize that.
Yeah. Whereas, and even, like, I think I know what you're saying, because some of the, even the better rock and roll, you know, and there are some great musicians, I'm sure, but I would say your average rock and roll person doesn't recognize good from bad in that. And I think what's hurt bluegrass for over the years is that, you know, so often, you know, a good bluegrass band couldn't really make a good living. There's very few of them that can make a good living. And so, therefore, the ones that you end up hearing are weekend guys or guys like me that probably, you know, we only play every once in a while, and you don't really have it together, so to speak. Mm. And so, you know, people listen to a poor band, and they'll say, well, that's bluegrass.
Yeah.
And they'll assume that the whole music is that way.
Yeah.
Know? Where, obviously, in rock, you know, that's where the money's at, and that's where you get your...
Yeah.
More people go out after it.
Yeah.
Aggressively.
Even a lot of the real top-name professionals can barely make it in bluegrass right now. Like, J.D. Crowe is just barely scrimping by.
It's amazing to me. It's amazing. But again, you know, it goes back to... not to say that I don't believe that bluegrass or old-time music would ever be as popular as rock or some of these other things, because there's more showmanship to rock and roll and that kind of stuff. I think you know, the painting of the face and the dancing and the balloons and all that. I think bluegrass is more of a family kind of thing. It's more for fun, that kind of thing. Also, I think if the problem as far as, you know, getting a bigger audience with bluegrass is that the better names don't stay in bluegrass. They either move on to other areas, and the other thing is that if people do go into bluegrass, you know, if it became more popular and they played it on the radio, say, you would have to find people like little me, you know, and when I was 14 and I stumbled across Flat and Scruggs and went, my God, what a great sound.
Yeah.
And you know, and then I went on from there. But I think it's like one time when I was working for the city of Cape Canaveral, I brought in some records that I was going to lend to another friend of mine out there. And one of the employees that worked for me walked in. I'll never forget this. I've said this to people many times. This is a good example of how people don't know bluegrass and why they don't. He said, who are those records? And he went to get them. I said, well, you won't recognize any of those names. And he picked it up, and there was J.D. Crowe and the Kentucky Mountain Boys. And then there was Ralph Stanley and oh, you know, six or eight names like that, you know. And he said, I've never heard of any of these people. I said, well, these are bluegrass people. He said, well, they must not be very good. And I said, well, what do you say? He says, well, the radio doesn't play it. So, you know, I think our whole concept of what's good is what the radio plays. And there's a whole, you know, as you know, there's a whole world of musicians and music out there that's available that people never have contact with.
Yeah.
Don't even know it exists.
Yeah. A lot of people don't even know the difference between, like, bluegrass and country music.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, that's an interesting thing, is that if you like country, most of the bluegrass people I know, a lot of them, not all of them, don't like country.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, they consider bluegrass country. That's country music. And for real, in my mind, that's true. That's music of the country, so to speak, and has been. But now more and more it's not that way. But in the past it was. Country music, as we know it today, has become extremely commercialized. And, you know, there's very little difference between top 40 and country. I mean,
yeah, no,
you have to sit there and listen. You know, is there a steel guitar in there? Well, yeah, I guess there is. Maybe we'll classify this country.
You know? Yeah. You just go through the radio now and you can barely tell the difference between country and, like, the soft rock stations.
Yeah. That's right.
And so many people don't even understand the difference between, like, bluegrass and country, you know, let alone, like, bluegrass and old time. Mm. I mean, that's completely out of the question.
And that's funny to me, is my experience with old time musicians. You know, typically bluegrass musicians, and I've seen this and I've really studied this, bluegrass musicians are typically country people, typically, you know, with exceptions. But in old-time music, Now, maybe in the old days, there were old-time people that were country music, and there's probably still some out there, but the majority of the old-time following, in Florida at least, are college graduates, college students, very well-educated people that really are, you know, they don't like bluegrass. There's this thing, you know, bluegrass is something that they not really enjoy. And I've always found that real interesting, that they're so related, but yet they're a little different in the style and the thinking, but yet there's so much style. I don't know how you can like one and not the other.
Yeah.
I mean, I love them both.
Yeah.
But I think I'm the exception.
Yeah. I like them both, too. I can see where people would get into, like, the old-time music, and almost maybe have maybe it's a snottiness about it, you know?
Well, I know a lot of bluegrass people don't like, you know, that old Framing that, you know, I've played some of that, and they say, put your picks on, let's hear some bluegrass. Mm-hmm. It's funny. It's just what you're geared to, I guess. They don't want to hear anymore. That's what's funny. They don't want to learn anymore about that other music. They like what they like, and that's all there is going to be.
Uh-huh. I'm interested also in some of the different bands that you've played with.
Well, I've played with, I could probably say several bands, but off and on through the years, and probably three or four of the bands were, probably three of us were the same, and there was one different, and the name changed, you know, but, we played Back Porch Bluegrass was one band, and there was the Country Boys, another band, and I can't hardly remember them anymore. Mm-hmm. But there was two or three of them in River City Grass, played with a little bit. And I've played for a lot of bands filling in, you know.
Have all those bands been around Jackson?
No. And out of Brevard County. We used to have a band, myself and Joe Smith and Fred Fortenberry. Fred lived in Jacksonville. Joe lived in Daytona. And I lived in Cocoa.
Wow.
And, of course, Joe and I go way back to high school, but that's how we know. But we met Fred at a festival, met him, got to know him, and we went up to visit with him. We formed a little band. It was funny, if Fred got a job in Jacksonville for us, we'd all go up there, and Joe would get something in Daytona or St. Augustine or somewhere, we'd go there, and then I'd get something in Melbourne or Cocoa or somewhere like that. And my brother at the time was in college in Gainesville, and he got us some jobs in Gainesville. We played frat houses, and we played The Canopy. It was an old bluegrass place in Gainesville years ago that was very, very popular.
Uh-huh.
And just a number of different places.
Yeah.
But, you know, we played Cape Canaveral, and we played just college places.
Yeah.
A lot of places. Probably didn't make any money. We got paid, but after all the expenses, and, I think we just, as we've always done, I think that's the difference. Most people who play bluegrass probably do it for the fun of it.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
But it's tough. You know, I played for Greengrass Revival out of Tampa, St. Petersburg. They still, I believe, are together. I played White Springs Folk Festival probably six or eight times with different bands, and mostly with Greengrass Revival. I played, I can't remember, just a number of times. You know, it goes back to about 71 or 2, something like that.
Where are kind of the hotbeds for bluegrass in Florida?
Say, for me, there's two locations that are, well, actually three that are strong. And one to me, and it's only because I've been over there and I'm most familiar with it, is Tampa.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the finest bands that I've ever heard are in Tampa. They have several bluegrass and acoustic music places to play, several, not just one or two. I think Miami, believe it or not, there's a good, strong following down south in Miami. And Orlando's always had a pretty good little following. And Gainesville's got a pretty good little following. You know, they all have a little following, but if you want to say the strongest in my experience would be Tampa Bay. Tallahassee's got a pretty good little following. Jacksonville's okay.
Yeah. Is that the colleges that attract the following?
I think so.
Yeah.
That's exactly it. And I think over in Tampa, like I was telling you about that radio station, they have a radio that plays 24 hours a day. Acoustic, jazz, blues, all kinds of stuff. Oriental music, experimental music. And it just goes on and on around the clock. And it's all voluntary. And in my mind, that's why the awareness in that area is so much higher than elsewhere.
Yeah.
People are, you know, are drenched with, you know, have opportunity to hear it.
Yeah, yeah.
Unlike, you know, other places, Jacksonville being one. They have one bluegrass show, and they used to always put it, and they still may be on it. It's like Saturday night at 9 o'clock, you know. I mean, if you're a young person, you're certainly nowhere near the radio at 9 o'clock on Saturday night. You know what I mean? It's not... So that, to me, has always been a failure. If they're going to do it, they need to put it on easily, a time where people would be able to listen.
Yeah. What are the music that you hear in the bars more around here, like in Jacksonville?
Country is big here. Rock, southern rock, they call it around here a lot more. But they got country music very strong and southern rock.
Lynyrd Skynyrd came from Jacksonville, right?
Yeah, right here. Yeah. Not too far from, well, not too far from my home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you ever meet any of the musicians?
No. As a matter of fact, at one point while I've been in Jacksonville, I ran into his brother.
Oh.
And they were came into Eckerd, and I used to work for Eckerd Drug Company. And they came in and they had an album cover that they were producing, and they needed some, I forget what they were wanting, some plastic, and we had to order it for them.
Yeah. I was wondering if the Southern Rockers got together with the bluegrass and old time people at all. Yeah.
No, but you know, interestingly enough, a lot of their, not Lynyrd Skynyrd, but there's another one. I can't think of his name now. That's a very popular Southern Rock movement. His father has been around Jacksonville for years and years and years. And he used to have a radio program. I wish I could think of his name. It just skips me now. Mm. But played banjo and guitar and sang and played the harmonica. And, you know, his roots are in old-time country music and whatnot. And became a very, very successful rock and roll star. Mm. I guess it comes down to, if you want to make music a living, you better look at the aspect of eating.
Yeah. Well, that's one thing I kind of like about bluegrass, is a chance just to get together and play it and not so much worry about some of the commercial side of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's the attraction.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll tell you, too, from my experience in playing music, bluegrass, and maybe just music in general, the problem with it in my mind is getting on a stage and playing songs that you may not even like, but the crowd like. Yeah, and you end up playing some of the same songs over and over and over. And that's the one bad thing about bluegrass. Everybody in the world knows Orange Blossom Special and Foggy Mountain Breakdown and Rocky Top and Dueling Banjos, you know. And
Fox on the Run.
You know, if you play them, they're all good songs and they're all nice. But, you know, you sit there and you think, how many times do I have to play that? You know, gosh, there's so many other good songs that we don't even give them a chance.
Yeah, yeah.
And that always bothered me.
Yeah. It always bothered me, too, at bluegrass places where you get kind of the new rookies to bluegrass that think of it just as foot-stomping music, and they'll start clapping and going, yahoo, right in the middle of a good break or something like that. And it's, wait a second here.
But it's interesting, though. You know, have you thought that the songs that people request are always those few songs that had airplay?
Mm.
Isn't it interesting that people remember those so well, and they're the only songs that have ever been aired?
Yeah.
Can you name any songs that have come out on the radio or on a television on a movie or something that was not successful?
Yeah.
I mean, they've all been successful. It's not interesting. They're all instrumentals, typically, except for Rocky Top.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, even like the theme for the Beverly Hillbillies.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I get that all the time. People know that.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I've always been amazed that, you know, they're so popular, and yet people feel like nobody wants to hear it.
Yeah.
And another thing is people like, there have been bands I've seen that have been bluegrass flavored, and probably the thing that they had in, as far as bluegrass with them, is that they had a 5-string banjo. And I think most people will say this. I've had it said to me a number of times, a band is not a bluegrass band unless it's got a banjo. And, you know, you take the banjo out, well, it's a band, and they could play most anything, you know. But with a banjo, it just puts it over the edge there a little bit. And there have been a number of bands, because they got a banjo, they can't get a record. They can't sell a record. But yet they take that banjo out, and all of a sudden it becomes something that's saleable. I find that interesting.
Do you think that's the record contract company?
Yeah, record people. Yeah. I feel like they think that if there's a banjo in it, then it's Hickey or it's Hillbilly or it's something. You know.
Yeah. Even back down like the 30s and 40s, it was considered Hillbilly music.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
That
coming from West Virginia, and that's funny. Every time someone asks me where I'm from, I say West Virginia. They go, oh, no wonder. That's where you learned to play the banjo. And really, that had nothing, absolutely nothing. I come from an Italian coal mining community that bluegrass music was the farthest thing that you would have ever heard around there. You would have heard Italian music. You know, you would have heard that far, far. In fact, I have an uncle that recently passed away that played the mandolin and guitar.
Yeah, I was wondering if there were musicians in your family there.
Yeah, well, my father played the harmonica. That was a big, very strong influence. He passed away a few years ago. And my uncle played the guitar and mandolin. And very good, not professional, very much like the way I think of myself. They've played for years at parties and family gatherings and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, he, just for the love of it, enjoyed it, you know. Yeah. He knew all these old polkas and Italian.
That's great.
Ave Maria, Tarantella. Mm-hmm. but that's what I was familiar with. Yeah. Not, you know, not bluegrass from up there.
Uh-huh.
I mean,
was banjo your first instrument?
Guitar.
Guitar was.
I think if I'm going to tell the truth, I think the reason why I didn't initially make the banjo my first instrument was because the guitar was very popular. So for me to buy the guitar, I could buy it with a certain less amount of embarrassment. You know, in those days, I mean, I don't think I ever met or ever knew anybody that played a banjo.
Yeah.
And so in our community in New Orleans, in that area, I mean, you know, banjo, good Lord, what are you going to do with that, you know? And so it took me a while to get up my nerve. And I think when I first originally bought, you know, I think I told you a story earlier. I bought the guitar at 16 instead of the banjo. And I was really enthused with the banjo, probably at the age of 14. But until I was like 18 or 17, maybe almost 18, I bought a Kent five-string banjo from Sears. And I just worked on that sucker for about a year and a half. I got drafted, and it was about the time Vietnam was going on. Anyway, I got drafted, and I put it up, and I ended up, to my luck, I went to Germany instead. And I had my mother ship my guitar over. And, you know, I just got so hankering for that banjo that I took my bottom string off and put it on the top. You ever hear of anybody doing that? And you know, it was so funny. I worked on the banjo for a year and a half over there with the high strings, you know, the top two strings taken off.
Yeah.
And or the top one, and moved the bottom one to the top, like the strings of the banjo. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting. It was a real interesting sound, you know.
Uh-huh.
It's just like a banjo, but low key. Nowadays, they've come out with a dobro banjo. Have you ever seen that?
Yeah, one of those over at the jam
right.
set.
Yeah. Yeah, he came. That's right. And that for that purpose, the reason why that instrument, I think, was developed was so because the banjo was such a piercing instrument that, you know, when it comes to a soft song, it's a problem. It destroys the mood of the music. So this instrument for banjo players comes out and it's very soft and it can be a very, very nice sounding instrument. Yeah. You know, it can contribute.
Is that always played with the sidebar?
No, not the banjo one.
Oh,
the banjo
really?
One is played.
Oh, so that's fretted.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Alan Shelton, I think, plays it. You know, he was fretting it, wasn't he, with a bar?
Yeah, he was using a sidebar.
But later on, he wasn't.
Okay, yeah, I didn't see that at all.
He had one of those little bridges that you put up under the string to raise it.
Okay.
And then when he wanted to go to pick it, he pulled that out.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Brought him down and tightened up strings.
Yeah, he had put it away almost by the time I figured out what he was playing. That's like,
yeah, he was picking it just like a regular banjo.
Oh, yeah. I'm kind of interested in the jam sessions that they have around here. There's the two big ones going on at Paula's Music House, right? And that's a monthly one?
Yeah,
monthly
every
one.
Saturday, I think.
Oh, Saturday.
Saturday of the month.
Uh-huh. Mike Johnson works with that one, right?
Yeah, well, he used to. I don't know if he still does. Mm. They used to have a jam, I don't know if it was before your time here, with Malabar Lounge.
Oh, they told me about that.
Every Wednesday, and actually that was the first jam I ever went to was out there and met a lot of people out there. That's where I met a lot of people. Mm. It used to go on forever, I think. Mm. You know, it went on for, I don't know how many years, 10 years.
Mm.
And I think what happened was you got a lot of pickers out there and just typical bluegrass situation, a lot of pickers and not a whole lot of buyers of alcohol, you know, like they wanted to sell. And so they discontinued that. The owner is a real bluegrass fan. They used to bring in Don Reno out there.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. So, but anyway, the picking sessions around town, there's, I think, one at the beach. Of course, I don't go into that. That's a, you know, that's out where you live. That's a trek out there. And but there's one on a sandwich shop on the south side, I think. I think they moved that. They were having a picking session over on the south side of town, down on University somewhere. And something happened. It burned up. And I got in my little newsletter that I joined the Jacksonville Bluegrass Association, mm-hmm. Northeast Florida. That they moved it to Westside Learning Center over off of San Juan and Lane.
Hmm.
And do you know where that's at?
They moved it there. That area there.
Yeah, well, they got it there now. And I've never gone. I've been wanting to go because that's real convenient. I live probably 3-4 miles from there. It's right down from where Wayne lives.
Okay.
And anyway, I've never gone.
Yeah. So people find out about those sessions both from like going to festivals, meeting other folks.
Yeah, word of mouth mostly, and then also if you belong to the Bluegrass Association, they have it listed in their newsletter every month.
I see.
And then you know, there's another couple other places. One is this Winners. I've told you it's a lounge, and every every Thursday night they have a jam session out there. No, it's on the west side.
Yeah. How long has Wayne been having his sessions there?
Gosh, it's been a year and a half now.
Oh, great.
I mean, every Wednesday or Thursday, it's been both days off and on. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm really surprised. He's usually gets, you know, off and on a good crowd.
Yeah, he had like 15, 20 people the 2 weeks ago. A
couple weeks ago, yeah.
Did he used to have them in his pawn shop at all?
No.
No.
I was telling him he ought to do it, but, you know, it's too jammed, it's too crowded.
Yeah.
And he might, you know, he'd have to be careful.
Try to tell everyone to come in and what they go
out with. Not everybody's honest, and that's a place where you could get away with it.
What's Wayne's last name, by the way?
F-A-N-N-I-N-G.
Okay, good, good. I got to flip this over.
Okay.
Let's see. With the jam sessions, those usually start like maybe 7, 8 o'clock at night, and they'll go for about 2, 3 hours, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's kind of, they've been known to go later. But.
Oh, yeah? Yeah. And it's kind of just people get together and try out new songs or
Well, you know, that's something that's interesting. That's not typically the case. I wish it was, because there's a lot of songs that I know that I'd like to try, but for whatever reasons, other people's limitations or that they don't know the song and you want to try to play it. You know, at a jam session, very often you end up playing the songs that you already know, that we all know, or is basically easy that somebody who doesn't know it can pick it up.
Yeah,
I think so often at Wayne's, especially, we'll play there, and it, you know, I don't know half the songs, but you know, they're reasonably easy to do something. Not a great break on it, but do something.
Uh-huh.
So, I enjoy that, but I really would love to do more experimental things. Mm-hmm. And let's try this song, but most people don't have the patience to learn it. You know, they just we'll learn it at home and.
Yeah.
But not here. Let's go ahead and play something we know.
Yeah. I've noticed that you really try to get other people to come up with some of their songs and bring something up to
them. At the place?
Yeah. Are you looking for new songs that way? Are you looking for new songs that way?
Oh, yeah, that's what I've always... You know, it's interesting. Fred Fortenberry is one who comes often. He called me just a little while ago, by the way, and he said he called to see if I was going to go. He was going to come, and he didn't get a hold of me for whatever reasons. But Fred knows a bunch of songs. But, you know, he's kind of shy, you know, and every once in a while you got to pull it out of him to get him to sing one. And I said, well, you know, do that old Merle Haggard number. Well, do that, you know, that old song that we've done for years. You know, he said, well, I need Joe to sing harmony with me or something. And there's always an excuse, you know.
Yeah.
But he does such a good job.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes people hesitate to do songs. And I'm that way on the banjo. You know, they always want the banjo or they want an instrumental, you know. And I enjoy playing, but that's why I always like a mandolin or a fiddle player there, because I don't want to end up playing the song by myself. You know what I'm saying?
Just,
you play the break, and then you play a different little similar break, and then you do a third time like that. And it's much more fun when you have two or three people that will take a break.
Not too many of the guitar players take breaks.
Yeah, Joe does.
Uh-huh.
Joe does. He's a very good guitar player, but I don't think he's... Has he ever played?
I don't think I've met him, actually.
He was there that week.
Okay.
I introduced you to him. They walked in late.
Oh,
Joe Smith.
Just on Wednesday?
Yeah. This was a week ago Wednesday.
A week ago Wednesday. Okay, let me think.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember them.
They came in late.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's some good voices there. Like the one guy that you played with the bluegrass band, the bigger guy. What's his name?
The guy that's Fred or Joe?
No.
Or somebody else.
Jimmy
Kilpatrick?
Yeah, Jimmy.
Yeah, he's got a very good... Now, his background is in country music.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of, same with Wayne. Wayne's background is in country music. They're both converts.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they still like country and all, but they, you know, have really gotten into the bluegrass thing.
Yeah.
And, Jimmy is a very good guitar player.
Mm-hmm.
He plays a country style of playing. I don't know how else to describe it.
Mm-hmm.
He'll play leads, but they're very... downstrokes, bum 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 bum, you know, rather than you know, like a bluegrass player would call eighth notes, a lot of eighth notes rather than quarter notes, like more succession to it, I guess.
Yeah, he's got that real high tenor sound. He sounds a lot like Earl Stanley or some of the old time. They're a real good bluegrass voice.
He's got a good voice.
Yeah,
he does. Now Fred's got an excellent voice. Yeah, I've always thought he's got a traditional bluegrass voice, not a country voice. I mean, that sounds silly. It's a country voice, but not what you would classify as a country voice on television. You know,
mm-hmm.
You hear like Ricky Skaggs. You hear that country. He's a country singer. He's from you know, he's from Ralph Stanley. And that's where his roots are. You can hear it.
Yeah,
I can hear that. I can spot him a mile away.
Yeah.
He used to play mandolin years ago when I used to go over there. Him and what's the other fellow that's just made, got a number one hit in the country charts now, Keith Whitley. Both of them played at the same time with Ralph Stanley. And they've come to Lawdie here. We used to have a Lawdie Bluegrass Festival for years. Mm-hmm. And they came there and all over Hatchet Creek and a number of other places that, you know, played. Mm-hmm. And I can remember them. You know, they weren't standouts by any means. They just played the band. Mm-hmm.
That's one thing I like about bluegrass. This is a real kind of interaction between the stars and the performers and the audience.
Just regular folk.
Yeah.
You know, they're not typically, and that's true. I mean, they're just regular people. They're not, what do they call those people? You know, they're not real
idols or anything.
Yeah, you know, they're just generally down. Or, you know, I'll never forget the first real hardcore bluegrass festival. I mean, I've been to folk festivals and whatnot. I think I told you up in Newport, Rhode Island, and the old Newport Folk Festival back in 68, 9. But bluegrass, the first bluegrass festival I ever went to was like 71, I believe. And it was over at Lawdie, and my buddy Pete Gallagher, who writes, used to write for the St. Petersburg Times, was doing a big story on bluegrass and its following and whatnot. And he's a reporter, and we'd always get in places free and whatnot. He'd always give me his camera, and I'd be the cameraman, so to speak. So, but we went in, and we sat down on that one weekend. I'll never forget it. I mean, I've seen these same people over the years, but at that time, these are the stars of bluegrass, the real legends in bluegrass. We sat and talked to Lester Flatt for probably 2 hours in a bus. We talked to Jim and Jesse in their hotel room for 2 hours. Bill Monroe sat down, interviewed him, you know, on tape. Uh-huh. Ralph Stanley. Just every name, I can't, you know, they're kind of skipping me now, but just every big name in bluegrass. Back in them days, they used to always come. Uh-huh. You know, all the names. Jimmy Martin was another one. They would all, you might look at a headliner and it would be 10 big names. Well, I think what's happened in bluegrass, although it's never become rock and roll, but it became more popular, and the artists, good for them, were now able to make a living. Mm-hmm. And they you know, demand much bigger prizes. And I saw it go from where everybody was there to when you were lucky to have one, Ralph Stanley, headlining it. And then you might have a number of local bands.
Yeah. People still come to the festivals, though, even though you might not necessarily have some of the real big-name acts.
Yeah. I think it's kind of, in my mind, if I was to ever organize something like that, I would have one or two big acts.
Yeah.
And then have all your locals, you know, people that you can afford and people that you need to support locally. I think that's smart. You get a crowd, obviously, by getting the name there, and hopefully somebody else can shine. And there's a lot of good ones in the state.
Yeah. Yeah. Florida's a pretty good state for bluegrass, isn't it, in general?
There's been a lot of people that come out of this area, out of Florida, in bluegrass. Of course, you know Chubby Wise came right out of Jackson. Well, actually, Glenn St. Mary, that's where he lives right now. You know where he lives? Have you been to his house?
No, they mentioned him to me, though.
There. Yeah, he's not far from here.
Yeah.
He just lives right out west of Wayne, about 5 miles, 10 miles. Mm-hmm. Orange Blossom Special, man. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of other ones. Right down near where I used to live in Kissimmee, Vassar Clemens came. Mm-hmm. And the list is endless, obviously. Tony Rice came from Tampa Bay area.
I wonder what draws, why that is that way. I mean, what makes Florida a bluegrass state like that?
Well, I think a lot of it, very, very honestly, I think a lot of Florida is people who migrated from the South, mm-hmm. you know, from the mountains, and North Carolina and Kentucky and West Virginia. Yeah, they get down here where they just follow their own, you know, they follow what they've always done.
Yeah.
I think that's part of it.
Yeah. That's a good thing about Florida is you get a lot of different music traditions.
Well, it's a circus down here.
Yeah.
I've always felt Florida's got everything, everybody. You know, every kind of culture and everybody from all over the country.
Yeah.
And people from Michigan and New York. Ottawa.
What are some of your favorite bluegrass bands and banjo players?
Yeah, well, you named one. One of my first, well, obviously Earl Scruggs has got to be every banjo player's initial response would be Earl Scruggs. But beyond Earl Scruggs, I've got a lot of real favorites. You know, I don't know that if anybody could say my favorite. But, I mean, at different periods of time, if we're talking bluegrass banjo now, I would have to say the way that I felt would be Earl Scruggs was my first, and then J.D. Crowe came in there. I have two or three of his early albums, you know, with the Kentucky Mountain Boys, and just worshipped that guy. I mean, I just couldn't see how he did those things, you know. And then it moved on to like Alan Munday is another one I really like. I play a lot of his stuff. I know a lot of his things. Alan Shelton, although Don Reno, I don't really play much of their stuff, but I really admire them. So that's probably my favorites right there. Mm-hmm. I'm sure I'm leaving somebody out, but in old time music, you know, there was John Burke, I don't know if you know him, a few others that I really admire. Very, very talented.
Mm-hmm.
But at different times, I really get into different ones.
Yeah.
It depends on the song. But Alan Munday, I like because he does a lot of driving music, but throws a lot of melodics in there. So it's kind of a mixture of both. J.D. Crowe is strictly a traditionalist. Now, I've never been a Sonny Osborne fan. A lot of people like him, although he's good.
Yeah, he's real fast.
Well, he plays, I just don't care for his style, some of the things that he does. Ralph Stanley is very, very basic in his playing. I think what really makes him good is his voice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's such an excellent singer. I tell you, somebody that's always, he's a local band player in Orlando, is Jim Fee. He played Big Timber.
Mm.
I don't know if you ever hear. These are all. They used to be out of Jacksonville, or Jacksonville was it? I think it was Jacksonville. And they had Chubby Anthony, who has passed away. Was one of the great. He was like 39 and he died. Great fiddle players, and he played for Ralph Stanley years ago.
Mm.
And there was Jim Fee. And there was a fiddle player, I can't remember his name, and a guitar player, and I can't remember his name. And all of them were like 250 pounds and up to 350. And they used to call it tall timber, I guess, originally was there. And then they changed the name to Big Timber.
That's great.
So, but they were really good. And Jim Fee is one of the... He's still got a band, and he plays guitar now. I can't ever believe it when I see him. And he has a banjo player that plays with him that isn't half the banjo player that he is. It's one of those things, if you want to be a lead singer, you can't play the banjo. It's like,
there's so few banjo players that sing.
And if they do play, they want to sing, they put the banjo and play the guitar.
Yeah.
That's really unfortunate.
Yeah. I saw a group, in fact, right last night down in St. Augustine, the Salt Run, their banjo player was singing, and singing some leads, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. I'd never really seen that much before.
Salt Run?
Yeah.
That's what it means. Are they based out of St. Augustine?
Yeah. They play every Thursday night at the White Lion.
Oh, yeah?
Except they're not going to be there in August.
We played at the White Lion. Yeah. Played Scarlet O'Hara. You been there before?
No.
That goes back.
St. Augustine's pretty good.
Yeah, we went down there last 2 weekends ago.
Yeah.
I go down there often. Every Thursday night.
Yeah. They're going to be back in September.
Oh, they're not there.
They're taking a break in August, but they said back in September they're all booked up. They've got a real great vocalist named Liz Watson. Have you heard her?
Mm-mm. Doesn't ring.
Boy, she's got a beautiful voice.
Do they have a harmonica player by any chance?
They didn't last night.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because a good friend of mine plays harp up here, played with a blues band, moved to St. Augustine.
Mm-hmm.
Plays Monson Lunch. Mm-hmm. He tells me that's where he plays a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you get down to really check out Liz Watson's voice, I mean, she's real clear, and she's got that real kind of country sound to it.
You know, Jacksonville, one of the places that really brought bluegrass out of the pits was, well, I mentioned to you Malabar Lounge,
mm-hmm.
but one of the biggies was Applejack's.
Mm-hmm.
I knew Applejack's back years ago. I moved to Jacksonville in 78, and I used to come up to Jacksonville in the early 70s, like 71, 72. Fred lived here.
Mm-hmm.
And he would say so-and-so was coming to town at Appleton. And me and Joe would go all the way up to Jacksonville, which was like 3 hours, just to spend the weekend and go to Applejack's. It was like the only place that I knew that would have good entertainment, you know, in a coffee house setting.
Mm-hmm.
Gainesville's got it. Used to have a place like that, too. Mm-hmm. But now their focus went from that to different things. I notice now Applejack's is really hardcore jazz-oriented.
Yeah.
All their entertainment is jazz.
Yeah.
So
sometimes they do blues, and Kendall Rogers is there.
Yeah, right. Those are some of the old favorites.
Yeah.
Mike Cross and all that.
Do you know of any old-time string band players in the area at all?
Not
or
here.
No, old-time fiddlers?
I know. Well, no, there used to be an old guy out of, used to run into all the time out of Uncle Buck's, all I ever know him from.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was out of Fargo, Georgia. He used to come down every once in a while to the festivals and whatnot. But that's the only guy, believe me, I would love to know some. All the years that I've played around here and talked, and just don't know one.
Well, you'd think there'd be at least one or two old-time fiddlers.
There probably are hidden somewhere, you know. But you just wonder, well, how do you get a hold of them? You know, Joe, my buddy Joe, has really worked hard on that old-time fiddling style, which is, you know, with the Georgia shuffle kind of.
Yeah.
He doesn't play it much, but he does a real good job on, like, Liberty and some of the old-time fiddle tunes, you know, 8th of January. He does a good job.
Yeah.
And I try to frail with him when we're playing. And, you know, I know breaks on those. Oh, yeah. We'll play together.
Just a fiddle and banjo sound together. Yeah. Real good old time style there.
Yeah. The only thing is, Joe always likes to go fast. And, you know, playing that style of banjo is difficult to play all them notes in a melodic way.
Yeah.
And down picking, you know, and picking up all them notes as we're going along, it's tough.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he always wants to play it faster than what most people play it on.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Are there any contests in the area at all for bluegrass or fiddle contests?
Well, they do have. Uh-huh. I'm going to tell you, and I've never participated, and I've never gone.
Uh-huh.
But I know that Jacksonville has the North Florida Bluegrass Festival sponsors a contest once a year, I think, and of course they put on concerts too, but they have a contest every year.
You don't play contests?
Never have.
Yeah.
The only one I ever did was at the Old Time Festival one down there, and you know, I didn't participate.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I participated in that one, but I never participated in any bluegrass ones.
Mm-hmm.
And the main reason is, I think every time the opportunity comes up, I didn't really have a group that we were tight together.
Oh.
You know, we all know a bunch of songs, but, you know, it's got to be more. There's more to it than that.
Yeah.
Just playing a good break, you all have to have a good band tightness and be able to know, you know, some different arrangements. And,
mm-hmm.
and usually people who play together all the time professionally have that.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes the melodic banjo players get kind of burned in the contest because the judges have such traditional taste.
Yeah, yeah.
You're playing all that wild stuff, it doesn't work.
Yeah. They feel it takes it away from the you know, the traditional purist, the attitude, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
It's silly.
Yeah, it's kind of... It's just what you're used to, I guess. Yeah. It was like when Charlie Parker kind of broke things loose in bebop. You know, he wasn't very well accepted right away. But now you go back and listen to it.
Yeah. So many people. It's just silly to me. You know, people grow and expand and go in different directions. I don't know why.
Yeah.
You know, I love the banjo. I mean, and whatever it may do, Bela Fleck or Bela Fleck, whatever his name is, and all these Tony Trischka, these guys do some wild things. And I don't think that I'm ever capable of thinking in those terms to be able to play like that.
Yeah.
And very frankly, probably wouldn't put time into it because it's just not for me. But gosh, do I really respect them for how well they play and how they do a tremendous job.
I'm surprised that, like, Bill Monroe gets along all right with Newgrass Revival. Yeah. You'd think there'd be a real split there.
Well, Bill Keith came out of Bill Monroe.
Oh, uh-huh.
I mean, that was his... Well, wasn't his first band. I guess Bill Keith played with Jim Queskin. Remember the jug band?
Yeah.
And then he went to Bill Monroe.
Yeah.
And he played a lot of that. Roanoke. Mm-hmm. You know, the old Bill Tune number. Roanoke, he played it melodically.
Mm-hmm.
And Bill apparently went right... You know, Monroe accepted it.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering what also some of the favorite songs are to play at some of these jam sessions.
Some that we play often.
Yeah, the ones that...
Old home plays, and, you know, it's
so like the cabin songs.
Yeah, a lot of cabin songs. You know, it's interesting you would ask me that. I'm the wrong guy to ask that to, because, right. You know, it's so funny. For so many years, I know so many tunes, but I bet I don't know a dozen of the names.
Oh, really?
I mean, I'm just, you know, we'll get together and I'll say, let's play, you know, that song. You know, it goes like this. No, and I'll play it. You know, oh, yeah, you're talking about. That's always been, you know, I know mostly banjo tunes since I don't sing, you know. But I know I love a lot of the melodics. I like the Blackberry Blossoms and the Molly Blooms and those kind of things.
Yeah.
Can you...
We were talking about, like, some of the favorite songs you like to play. You mentioned, like, to do kind of the...
I know a lot of the instrumentals, and my favorite, if you're speaking to me, my favorites are the fiddle tunes, obviously, because they're banjo tunes, and that's what I know. I don't sing, so therefore, you know, but I like a lot of the vocals. In fact, I love the old Stanley tunes, and I like a lot of the old Jimmy Martin stuff, and if I, you know, somebody's going to sing, I'm going to listen, that's the tunes I would like to hear.
Yeah.
Rank Stranger, you know, that style, that type of thing. Yeah. But as far as instrumentals, now I love the old tunes. I love the Salt Creek, like we played the other night, and I enjoy the old Joe Clark and just so many of them. Darcy Farrow I play, and Molly Bloom, and Blackberry Blossom, and June Apple, and Forked Deer. Yeah. Just, it's endless.
Those little fiddle tunes really take off nice on the melodic style.
Yeah. Oh, I think it fits so well, and that's why I enjoy it. They roll really nice.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's hard sometimes to get somebody else to sit down and learn it. That's part of the problem. I can go home, and there are songs, and I always accuse people, and there's a few people that I've probably forgot more than I know. And, you know, eventually somebody will come up and say, do you know Dusty Miller? And I said, you know, I knew that unbelievably well about 7 years ago, you know. And then I got to sit there and, you know, by the time I figure it out and remember it, the song's Forget It, Let's Go On to Something Else. Yeah. Woody, the other night, when he was there, he jumped into Billy in the Low Ground. Hmm. Well, I love that tune, and I play it on the banjo. And but, you know, I had to remember, what key is that? That's in the key of C, if I remember. And I moved it up, and he'd already jumped into the tune. And I'm sitting there now, was it in this position? And I'm just working away at it, trying to remember it. About the time I got it where I was comfortable and remembered it, he put the fiddle up. It was done. No. Finished, you know. I'm thinking, well, that was just perfect. You know?
Yeah. But, you played one that I hadn't heard before. Was it Bill Cheatham?
Bill Cheatham, oh, yeah.
Yeah, I never heard of that one.
No, that's a real popular one.
Huh.
Yeah, that's maybe it's a popular one in the South. I don't know. But Bill Cheatham, I've played for years and years.
Huh.
That's a lot of variations to that one. I like that one because I worked, I think I played three then. I just know a lot of variations on that one.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah.
It's a nice flowing tune. And I play it backwards too. I don't know why I play it backwards. You know, if you remember how the tune goes, it starts with this dun 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 dun, you know, like that. And then the second part, it's different. Well, anywhere you go, and in fact, every time someone says, let's play Bill Cheatham, they'll always start with what I call the B part.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, it's so funny. I have played on the stage with the Greengrass Revival one time, and I don't know what it is. I've played it for so long, the way that I play it, that they play it the opposite. And really, most people do. I think I'm the one that plays it backwards. But it sounds good, and I don't really care. It's the folk process.
There you go.
And anyway, so yeah, I got up there one time, you know, in front of 1,000 people, and they're starting to play. You know, he said, let's play Bill Cheatham. I said, jump into it, you know, and he jumps off, and I'm going, what is he doing? You know, and it caught halfway through that he had reversed it. He was doing it the right way, probably. Well, you know, come to my turn, and I can't think to jump into the song that way. So I jump into it backwards. I couldn't believe it. I was so embarrassed. But you know, that's one of those songs I really enjoy. That's another one. Yeah. There's so many of them.
Yeah.
You know, Soldier's Joy. I could list, if I sit there and think about it, they'll just keep coming. There's so many of them I know.
Yeah.
But nobody usually plays them. I mean, you know, a lot of the guys don't know them.
Yeah.
Just the fiddle player does. And if you don't have a fiddle player, you know, or a guitar player that likes fiddle tunes, which is not that often either. Usually if they play guitar, they like to sing.
Mm.
Isn't that the case typically?
Yeah, I've seen that. Yeah. Okay, let's see. Oh, I was wondering also about some of the festivals that you play at. What are some of your favorite ones?
That I play at?
Or that you just go to?
Go to. The ones that I've gone to for years was the Lottie Bluegrass Festival.
Where's that one?
Well, it's no longer.
Oh.
It just discontinued, and it was going for like 14 years. Over right on the other side of Stark.
Hmm.
It's a little community. And, you know, since they've gone out, I've gone to Hoboken. I've been to a lot. I used to go to a lot of them all throughout. And Middleburg used to have one. Gainesville used to have Hatchet Creek, which was west of the town. And, there's just a bunch of them throughout. See, their names skip me now, but Okeechobee has one. Kissimmee has one. South Georgia's got Hoboken. I like Hoboken. That's one of my favorite ones. It's a very clean campground, very well organized. We used to go to St. George, Georgia. They used to have a nice one up there. A lot of them have kind of, because of whatever reasons, you know, they have discontinued.
Mm-hmm.
But Hoboken's still going strong.
Okay. All right, let's see. I think I've gone over about everything here that I had written down. Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks for your time.
Right.
This gives me some good background stuff to work with here.
Okay, good. I'm glad I could help.
Yeah.
Thank you, Ray.